Last week we introduced the prohibition of Rabban Rabbi Shalakov. We mentioned that the Chacham made a special list referring to most of the Rishonim was instituted not so much for kashrus concerns, but rather for chassidus concerns. We want to try to cut down on relation intermarriage, too much special intermingling with the non-Jews, and therefore Chazal prohibited eating food that was cooked by a non-Jew. We saw that there are certain coolers that Chazal built into the system, and the food was edible raw, the food wasn't such a fancy kind of food. Now we get to the next major kula, which becomes very, very relevant for us, the Maisa. That's what the Gemara tells us in a few different applications. If food is cooked by a non-Jew, but it's not completely cooked by a non-Jew, namely the Jew is participating to some degree in the official process, that's no longer considered to be a prohibition of the Shalachim. Again, the reason is also a throwback that we spoke about last week, that Chazal wanted to make it clear that it's not business as usual in terms of eating with a non-Jew. We shouldn't have this mindset and go to the non-Jew's house and just eat everything that he cooks, and as long as the food is technically kosher. Okay, now, we wanted to make it dark, we wanted to make sure it's safe. But, so every time we eat together with the non-Jew, you have to always ask yourself, did I do part of the cooking? Did the Jew turn on the fire? Did the Jew do something? So that's going to, in of itself, create that sense of a little bit of a hachocha, that sense of separation, which is exactly what this Allah is trying to create. The question is, what exactly constitutes a dish of Ayyadei Yisrael? When you have this combination of cooking, part of the cooking is done by the Jew, part of it is done by the non-Jew, what exactly are the parameters of this halacha? Again, we'll stop after the sugya and the Gemara itself, try to apply this halacha l'maisa today. The sugya begins with the Chamat Chesem and Beis and Masechet of the Zohar. If the Nami Amr Rav Rechan Rav Yechanan, the Amr Lam Rav Acha Rav Rechan Rav Yechanan, somebody says in the Rav Yechanan the following statement, Bein Sheniach Ayyadei Kichavim V'Hotach Yisrael, Bein Sheniach Yisrael V'Hotach Ayyadei Kichavim Mutter, here the Gemara seems to be describing a cooking process where even though the food may have initially been put onto the fire by the non-Jew, if the Jew flipped it around, if the Jew did something to it, he maneuvered the food around a little bit, or the Jew put the food down and the non-Jew put the food around a little bit. The bottom line is that there was a little bit of participation within the food itself by the Jew, so that's perfectly okay. As long as the Jew is participating in some of the actual cooking, that's all right. Then the Gemara continues with a similar halacha, but the Gemara shifts a little bit out of the realm of Bishul Akum into the realm of Tas Akum. Now, we have not yet discussed Tas Akum, it's a topic in itself, but we have to familiarize ourselves a little bit in order to understand this application here. The Mishnah tells us in Masechet Avodah Zarah that one is not permitted to eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew. For the same reason, that we want to refrain from the food cooked by the non-Jew, the bread that was baked by the non-Jew is off limits as well. Whereas it comes to the bread, so the Gemara and then the Rishonim tells us a little bit more, Chazal were concerned that it's very, very hard to observe this halacha. To prohibit all bread that was baked by non-Jews was very, very difficult, primarily because many of the ovens, many of the setups, people in the Middle Ages, they had a setup like this, where it was prohibited for the Jews to actually run the bakery. The non-Jews were taking everything. But how in the world did you observe this halacha of having a Pas Yisrael? But according to the Mishnah, Pas Yisrael was really needed. But the Gemara itself begins to chisel away, it doesn't tell us. But since it was a big shas of chak in order to enable the Jews to eat bread, the Chazal modified this today a little bit. Although at first glance it sounds like Pas Akum is mamish trait, the same as Bishul Akum, the Gemara concludes that not exactly, that as long as the Pas was baked in a more of a professional setting, more of a commercial setting, then there's less of a fear. And therefore, Chazal basically did away with the prohibition of Pas Akum. It was what's called Pas Talpa. Pas literally means a baker's bread. If your next-door neighbor calls you in for a nice loaf of bread, even though the bread is technically the ingredient that's the kosher, that bread is also, that's called Pas Akum. And that's also Mikra did even today. But if it's done by a professional baker, as long as you know for a fast ingredient the kosher, then it's all right. So the Gemara is discussing within this Kedera Pas Akum, assuming like in the old days there was a real prohibition of Pas Akum, so what exactly constitutes Pas Akum? Remember the number of Hina, back to the first of the Rambam Kalman, in the third line, Harifta, if you have a loaf of bread, to Shagar Adi Gechavim V'Ofa Yisrael, Inam is Shagar Yisrael V'Ofa Adi Gechavim, Inam is Shagar Adi Gechavim V'Ofa Adi Gechavim, V'Ofa Yisrael V'Chotav V'Chitim, Yishap V'Dovim. Any of these three above cases would be permissible. One of these three cases. The one is, case number one is, when the non-Jew lit the fire, the non-Jew set up the oven, he put in the water, he lit the fire of the oven, and now the Jew comes and actually puts the dough in. So the Jew does a literal baking, that's called Pas Yisrael, that's the Shomer thing. Well, what about the other way around? What if the Jew lights the fire and the non-Jew puts the bread in, that's also called Pas Yisrael. What if the non-Jew lights the fire and the non-Jew does the baking? So the Jew comes and stirs the coals a little bit, that's also okay. The above, as long as the Jew participates, in any process along the way, that's not considered to be a prohibition upon Akum. So it's clear from the Gemara that all that's necessary is a Jew's participation, either in the actual bread, the actual dough itself, or even in the fire, which is really a prelude to the bread. It's really an earlier process. Just the mere creating the fire, building the coals, or making the fire itself would solve any problems of Pas Akum. So now we have two Gemaras. There's one Gemara that talks about Bishul Akum, and one Gemara that talks about Pas Akum. When it comes to Bishul Akum, the Gemara says you need a Yisrael to be assisting. When it comes to Pas Akum, you also need Yisrael to be assisting. When it comes to Pas Akum, the Gemara is explicit that the assistance of Yisrael doesn't have to be in the bread proper. Even assisting in the fire is also good. The question is, do we connect to that? That's the real question. Do we say that all of these rules are the same? Whatever standards are necessary to make something pass Yisrael are similar standards for Bishul Yisrael, or maybe not. Maybe there are differences. Maybe the rules are not necessarily the same. So this is a major Machlokes HaRishonim. So this Machlokes HaRishonim goes over to Shulchan Aruch Halacha L'Maaseh in the second of the Mamakam. So the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridaya in Siman Kuf Yud Gimel to Zion, right? Ein shgirat, and shgira just tells you what that means. Havar means the lighting of the fire. Ein shgirat satanim o elas el bepas. The only time that we permit the mere lighting of a fire to make something Jewish prepared food, that's when it comes to bread. And there are different reasons why we should be mechach, why we should differentiate between bread and bishul. Some say pasach in general is more meikil. Some say that the preparation of an oven for bread is a much more significant stage than the mere preparation of a fire to cook upon. Whatever the reason is, the Shekhar Fasim is like the Machmirim, the Ein Shkira Satan will Elat El Rafa. While Bisharim is Bashlim, when it comes to food that's cooked, Ein Shkira Satan or Velohat Mafasa Ein Shmala Umayrit. Says the Shekhar very clearly that preparing the fire, lighting the fire is garnished. There's absolutely nothing. The only thing that makes it Bishul Yisrael, Elaha Hanocha Dafka. It has to be that the Jew literally puts the food onto the fire. Therefore, if a Jew wants to use a flame that was prepared by a goy, so the Jew has to make sure that he puts the pan, he puts the pot right there. If the non-Jew does, that's not going to help. Neither the Jew touches up the fire a little bit, that's not going to help either. So Shulchan Aruch is very machmir in the shayla. He talks in that lighting a fire, even though done by the Jew, does not help. It helps the pasachim, but it will not help the bishulam. So that's a different story. That's a little bit of a different story. I mean, there, the wine is potentially going to be traced if the goy touches it, but if it becomes the animal, it's cooked up, so then that type of wine is not subject to the issue of Stam Yedim. We'll have to wait for another, down the line, how that fits into this picture. So comes the Ramah, at the end of the third line, the Yesh Chokin, there are those who disagree, who svilu that lochas ha'esh, ochitim yichol ha'hari v'li v'shchol in path. There's the Ramah, there are those Rishon who equated path to bishul, and said that if lighting a fire works for path, then lighting a fire works for bishul. If stirring a pre-existing fire works for path, then it works for bishul as well. There's the Ramah, b'chei no'agin, he quotes from a whole bunch of Ashkenazi Rishonim, Gazar Sheridura, Mr. Aruch, and the Moichan, these are all Ashkenazi Rishonim. Not a great surprise that the Shulchan Aruch didn't quote them. The Ramah quotes from all the Ashkenazi Rishonim more lenient than the Shaz. Oh, so the Chor is a throwback to the idea that it creates a hecker. It means every time I want to eat food by a non-Jew, I have to keep on asking myself that question. I can't just walk to the guy's house and eat. I got to make sure to be there first to light the fire. That in and of itself is going to create a certain degree of distance between the two. Right. If the reason is, again, it may also be a throwback to that. Right. So we said last week that when we say that we're afraid of being betrayed, it's not that we're really afraid of it. If we're really honest and goodness afraid of strength, then it should be also in the Torah. That's the something that writes the Chumrah. The difference is that Chazal wanted us to get out of the habit of just going to the non-Jews' house and eating a steak there. Even though this particular steak may be kosher, it's just a bad policy because next week's steak may not be kosher. So if every time I eat by a non-Jew, I got to ask myself a million questions. Did I cook it? Did he cook it? Did I put it in the fire? Did he put it on the fire? That in of itself is going to create that same barrier which would be sufficient to avoid that chashash. So the Ramah is very, very making here. The Ramah is Chedar Adin. And then the Ramah says, even further, if it's down to the second line from the bottom, Raksha Kusis is Likua Eshma Eshal Yisrael Shoy. Ramah quotes Akula Tapakula. He says, what if the Jew didn't actually light this fire? The Jew lit another fire. The Jew lit a candle last week, and the candle was sitting here, and the non-Jew comes and lights from that candle and lights up the fire and cooks up the steak for you. Ramah says, that's also okay. Because at the end of the day, there was some kind of a sheet of some kind of a partnership of additional Ayyadei Yisrael. And since the Ramah makes the participation of the Jew can take place not only in the food, but even in the lighting of the fire, that would be okay as well. How do we pass in halacha nishan mechayim mechaper in Ramah? Depends. We ask who the we is. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, this would be a problem. According to the Sfardim, this would be a problem. According to the Ashkenazim, this would be okay. This is a common practice in America for sure. This is a common practice. And we, most of us Ashkenazim, we rely on this rule of Ramah. So all of our catering establishments, all the wedding halls, all the shuls, wherever any place that any cooking that's being done by goyim. Is basically relying on this idea that it's considered to be sufficient to have the non-Jew just really light the fire, and that's good enough. Non-Jew would be there. Have the Jew light the fire. But this would of course pose serious problems for Sfardim. Those Sfardim who want to follow the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch would have a lot of problems with it. They would not be able to just come going to a regular Ashkenazi restaurant, a regular Ashkenazi chasana. They would have to be concerned that according to the Shulchan Aruch, the standards of Bishul Yisrael are not met with the lighting of the fire. So where does that place the Sfardim in this Marazet? Depends on the Sfardim you ask. There are some who are Machmanis, there are some who will not eat in our regular restaurants, our regular catering, but there's anything that's potentially subject to Bishul Akal. They'll eat the carrots, and they'll eat the stuff that's Eid al Shukhullah, those kinds of things, but anything that's fancy, and anything that's not edible raw, they will not eat, in depth into the view of the Shukhullah, who's put it from the Sfardim Rishon Mor Machmanis. The Rabbi Vadi Yosef writes in one of his tshuvas that he thinks that he can rely on the source for those five who want to be mechel. Those five who want to rely on the Ashkenazi tzach based on the following. Vadi writes, that's a little bit of a mistake. What's the mistake? Remember last week, we pointed out that there's one day in Tosfos that Bishul Akum doesn't apply if it's a Jewish home. The whole issue of Bishul Akum, which the most we showed was chaskos oriented, but that makes sense when you're going to the goy camp. We don't want you to go eat dinner by the goy and then want to marry the goy's daughter. But if the guy is coming and cooking in your house, it's a whole different ballgame. So there's one day in Rishon that said that the whole list of Bishul Akum doesn't apply. The Rabbi Natan was vehemently opposed to that. We saw the Rabbi Natan last week was opposed to that view. He said there was a low float and the reasons apply, and even the reasons don't apply, the issue applies. So la halacha, we don't accept that view. But Rabbi Vadi writes, did they speak alone after? It's a little bit of a softening for Masho. They write, maybe we can put together a little bit of a steak for the side who want to eat in our restaurant. Number one, maybe that Dan Tosis is right, that a basis role is legally excluded from Bishul Akum. And even if that Dan Tosis is wrong, he writes to the Suffolk. Maybe the Ashkenazim are right, the Suffolk. Maybe the Ramah is right, that Ramah is the Ish is good enough. So we were able to get a Suffolk, at least one Suffolk out of Rav Avadia, being longer close to the five one to eat in our institution. But again, the Ish, some five and the man are double master, and this is others who are make up. That's the further shadow. Whether the quality, this is really a fake shadow about how much of a suffix or something has to be. 1 in 10 shots, that's called a fake faker. That's a big discussion of a fake faker. Okay, so that's. So even though the lighting of the fire today is taking on a whole new entity, we'll see if we go on a little bit more, what exactly qualifies as sufficient lighting of the fire? We're not even sure that lighting of the fire is good enough. According to Shulchan Aruch, it's not even good enough. But we're going to take it to the next level. According to the Ramah, according to our Ashkenazi practice, what is sufficiently called lighting of the fire? So we'll get that in a second. But I call upon within those fire, the more machma and the shayla, that mamash those are four options. You can't come down here at our restaurant. There are some restaurants, I don't know, I'm not sure whether we do it here, but there are certain restaurants which have a larger society population who actually give an option. We can see it sometimes on the Hashkacha that will say that if you want to come in and flip your own burger or something, so we'll let you do that. I imagine it's a fancy restaurant. They're not going to let the guy go in there and start cooking up the fancy steak. But I have seen places where there's a little sign that says if you want to come and put your burger on yourself, that it should be Bishul Yisrael, even according to the Maran HaShulchan Aruch. We will accommodate for you. Remember years ago when why you started their CapCard program, who were in the dorms have to buy into the cap card. There were some of the tiny boys who lodged complaints. If that's not fair, we can't eat anything. 90% of the cap is straight according to our standards. Because they're against Mishal Akum, that's not fair. I think they made a dispensation for them. But then there were some boys who were mafter and chodosh, mafter and yasha, so they said that it's not fair. Everyone's looking for chumrah. Everyone's trying to save a couple of dollars. Everyone found a different chumrah that the cap goes into the character. But whatever. Anyway, get back to the story. So we're going to assume for now, like the Ramah, that it's good enough to have even a participation in terms of the lighting of the fire. That's also good. Now the question is, well, how much lighting of the fire constitutes lighting of a fire? Remember, this whole kula is a throwback to Pasch. That's by Pasch, for sure, it applies. Even in the Kodesh Shacharoch, it applies. And Ashkenaz Rishonim borrowed the kula from Pasch and plugged it into Bishul. The question is, what is good enough? How much constitutes the participation of the Jew for Pasch and then by extension to Bishul? Take a look at the third of the Mamakama. The Tosfos comment in Avodah Zarah, that's on the Chet of the days, the Osi Yisrael b'chati chitu b'gicholot. The Gemara gave an example where the Goy basically did everything. He lit the fire and he put the dough into the oven. He did mamash hakol mikol. The Jew came along and gave a little bit of a stir, a little bit of a nothing. The comes by and says, Mikula shmais in mashma, the ba'ina sheyeya Yisrael makar v'bishol ptah. It's not enough for the Jew to do a minuscule thing. He's got to do something that at least has some participation, at least has some effect. But without the Jew stirring the coals, maybe the bread would have baked in an hour and a half, and now baked in an hour and 20 minutes. If you did something, we have to be able to put our fingers on, there was some kind of an addition, some kind of a real physical effect of the Jew's participation. And now Tosfos writes, there's a minhag today in the realm of Pasach, but again, whatever says by Pasach, we're going to immediately jump into the Mishal, that there was a minhag that everything was done by the Goyim. As we said before, in the Middle Ages, very often the Goyim didn't let the Jews do a lot of things. All the skilled arts and everything, the guild system, nothing was ever being done by the Jews. So the Goyim controlled the bakeries, they controlled everything. But now the Jew wants to have a Pasach Yisrael. Again, we spoke about whether it's really necessary, but the Jew wants to make a Pasach Yisrael. What do you do? If the Goyim is not letting him light the fire, and the Goyim is not letting him put the dough in. So what's the Goyim letting him do? He take a little splinter of wood, a piece of, throw into the fire. You got this raging flame that's been baking the bread for the last 10 hours. The Jew comes in and throws a little piece of wood in and shoy. So it says the Tosfos that people were relying on that. Mashinagu lahashta kisam latanar. Somchur mashiyesh b'dvarim shemem b'nei bovel b'nei Eretz Yisrael. So they were relying on there was a sefer that was floating around. I don't know whether the sefer even exists. I'm not sure. But there was apparently a sefer that had different minhagim. That there were discrepancies in minhagim between the Bnei Bavel and the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. But we already know there were many different minhagim between the Bnei Bavel and the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. We have the Rishonim and Bavlis, we have different mitzvot like Tzivah. There are a lot of differences in minhagim between the different communities. So one of the things that's mentioned in this list is the Gemara Bnei Bavel Mashlichim Kisam L'Tanur, but Bnei Ma'ir of those from the west, right? So was the west, if it was for the west than Bavel, Olam Kisam Zeba Malo Mamirin. So apparently in this list of different minhagim between the Bnei Bavel and Bnei Eretz Yisrael, this minhag was listed, and it was recorded as saying that in Eretz Yisrael they thought this was a big joke, just to throw a little bit of a piece of wood into a fire to garnish, and the Bnei Bavel relied on this. And Tosfos says, minhag, we always follow the Talmud Bavel, we follow the minhagim with the Bnei Bavel, and therefore Tosfos writes, that perhaps we have a right to sanction this idea, even though the Hashlacha Kisim is not doing all that much, a little bit of smash or something, but maybe that's going to be good enough. So that's what tells the defense of that practice. Well, the question is, how does this play out, this Manazah? What would be the halachic equivalent of this Manazah? So there was a big discussion in the post-game about the following. There are a lot of technical issues in terms of trying to make sure that our food is official Yisrael for sure, and even to a certain degree, past Yisrael. We're able to make things past Yisrael. We'd like to try to do that also, even though it's not absolutely necessary. So why could we possibly plug this in a more modern sense, rather than throwing pieces of wood and splinters into the fire, into the bed? What could we possibly do? There is a story that told me, I don't know whether it's a true story or legend, a story apparently about Rabbi Tzol Salanta, that Rabbi Tzol Salanta used to walk around town, used to walk around the Goyish bakeries in the middle of the night, the bakeries, even today, bakeries, they start taking very, very early in the morning. He would walk around in the wee hours of the morning, and he would probably smoke the pipe, I guess, to the story. It's much and much back in the 1700s. So he would walk around to the bakeries, and he would ask him if he could just come and walk by each of the ovens, and he would take some of the ashes from his pipe and throw it into the oven. So he thought that was Hashlachas Kisim. That would be good enough. Now the question is, what that was the 1700s. That moved to the 2000s. So what would be the modern day equivalent of this? There was a discussion about the light bulb. Namely, that sometimes it's hard for a Jew to actually be there to literally turn on the oven, turn on the pilot, which we like to do. But sometimes it's not so practical to do that. But can you have a bulb that was put inside the oven, was turned on by the Jew 20 years ago, and that bulb is always on, and that bulb is emitting a little bit of heat, not all that much, can bake bread with it, but it's maybe the same as the kisub. Maybe that bulb is emitting a little bit of heat, so every time the guy turns on the oven, so the oven is reaching a great 600 degrees, and with that, the light bulb is reaching 600.01 degrees. The question is that also good? Is that also good shlacha kisub? Again, this is obviously a throwback to the question that you raised. It doesn't really do all that much. I mean, this is hard to believe it's going to create a heker. But the question is, once Chazal formulated a certain kula, so we sometimes have the right to say a little bit of a low plug of kula also. Even though we usually think of low plug as the chumra, but every once in a while, we gain from a low plug of kula. Can you say that this is like the equivalent of Yisrael participating in the lighting or not? So this is a big question in different Ashkach organizations. So there are some organizations that accepted this. They felt that even though it's a very, very minuscule amount, that's good enough. And there are others who laughed as well. They said, come on, it's garnish me. It's nothing from nothing. This is less than Rabbi Yisrael Kalam. This is ashes. This is less than the kisa. This is not nothing. Doesn't know anything. Nobody knows it's there. And the whole thing is lahiruz bamiyah. Again, there's so much talk organizations that rely on this. Primarily, this is more of an issue when it comes to Pasach, which is, again, much less of an issue anyway. Maybe it would be a little bit more ground to look the other way. There are other organizations that affect a little bit of a different mechanism, the same basic idea. It's not an actual, it's a light bulb, but some kind of other electric device that gets stuck into the oven, and it always gives off a little bit of heat, and they were assuming this is better than the light bulb theory. So there's one particular organization in town that relies on this, and they assume that everything is passed on based on this device. I was told, again, this is all hearsay, I was told that this was brought to Rosh Sternberg, so Rosh Sternberg approved this particular device. Again, I was there, I didn't see it, but I was told by someone who themselves said that they were involved in the bringing of this particular device to Rosh Sternberg and explaining it to him, and he thought that this was better, perhaps, than the light bulb, perhaps this would suffice. Again, these are more in the postural realm rather than in the visual realm. What do we do for visual akum? So the visual akum, usually it's done if you try to get somebody to turn on the fire. Well, all, reputable hashkachas should have a system set up that the Jew, either the Jewish owner or Jewish worker or the mashkiach, somebody Jewish turns on the fires in the morning. Once somebody Jewish turns on the fires in the morning, then whatever cooking is under the going, we think according to Ashkenazi Ramah standards, would be acceptable. One has to be very careful that the fires do not get turned off during the day. Sometimes if the fire goes out, and the non-Jew turns it back on again, that's a big problem. One of the jobs of any good mashkiach is to make sure that doesn't happen. Anytime the fires get off, there should be absolute explicit instructions that the fires are not to be turned back on by anybody except for Mashiach or whoever the appropriate Jewish person is. A good hashkacha will have those signs written in the kitchen in multiple languages, whatever languages people who work in the kitchen understand. It should be very clear as day that under no circumstances are they permitted to turn on the fires. These types of protocols should also be followed in one's own home. That if a Jew turns on the fire at the beginning of the day, so if a non-Jew is doing some cooking, that would be all right. In the old stove, we used to have pilot lights. Most of us don't have those kinds of stoves anymore. But in the old stove, which I all grew up with, so you had a pilot light. So as long as the Jew turned on the pilot light 50 years ago, so when you move into your apartment, blow it out and light it, and now you know it's Eisha Yisrael. And then any dish that's going to take place for the next, until someone else blows it out, is going to still be Ve'ikred in Dish of Yisrael. As long as we don't have that, the pilot lights don't exist anymore. Every time you turn on the stove, talk the fire from scratch, then you run into a problem of visual akum. So one has to be careful that one cannot leave a non-Jewish free range for just multiple reasons. But one of the reasons being, you're going to run into potential issues of visual akum. So there is a Pesach Tshuva in the beginning of the Chelik Beis in Yerodeh, the Kol Tzarach HaRein argued that if the Jew has the status of the Mumer in Halacha, then maybe the din of Bishul Akum would apply to him. Despite also a throwback what the reasons were. If the reason is you shouldn't marry his daughter, you're allowed to marry his daughter. Even if he's not close, he can do Mechal Shabbos, he's close for him to marry his daughter. If the reason is that Shem Yechlev Gvaram Asurim, then maybe that reason would apply to a Mumer. Even though the Tshuva leaves it kind of hanging, and there are some folks who are Machna for this, I don't think that most people are Machna for this. I think that we usually assume the person is Jewish, then the whole din of Bishlachim don't apply to him. Also, the fact that we're not so convinced that there's any real category of mumer is none of that. The whole idea of a mumer is none of that is very, very shaky, because mumer conjures up the image of a person who's a real mayor, so to speak. If he really knows what he's doing and he's being, we've read off the derech intentionally, that doesn't speak to most people today. 99.9% of the folks the Chol Shabbos today are such because they never knew otherwise. It's very hard to pinpoint the person as a mumer.
From the same, if heat was generated by the boiler, which is left on my entire life, wouldn't that be adequate? There was a kind of like non-pure hot water boiler all the time.
Yeah, but that's not something you're cooking.
That's heating up the water in here.
I'm cooking a steak. I'm cooking a chicken in the
stove. If I take water and I heat it up on the stove, it's already in it. You have to let it go when I put it on the stove because it came out of hot water.
You mean if I heated up the hot water?
I put it on the stove anyway. It made it 180 degrees.
So the fact that I'm putting the chicken, I put the chicken into a pot of cold water, right? And the guy turned on the fire, and the guy did everything that's mishlachah. You want to suggest that if I put the chicken into a pot of hot water, and that hot water came about because it was heated up by the boiler from downstairs 20 years ago, I'm the one who turned it on. I don't think about that. Okay. So other than that, we've been talking about the Jews' participation, either in terms of the actual cooking process itself. Or in terms of the flame, I didn't mention you referred to before that this man is there, so it's even a newfangled way of doing this. So sometimes you have a situation where the mashgiach can't make it. You have to start, especially factory settings, you have to do certain kinds of cooking. The mashgiach can't make it. Mashgiach is nowhere around. Mashgiach is 100 miles away. Okay, putting aside all the other kashrus problems, issues with that. So is there any way to solve the problem? For the answer is yeah, they do it with manas all the time now. They do it by remote. You have the mashgiach sitting in. He's sitting in Bar Park, and he's turning on an oven in Wyoming. So it's a nice Mechol Yom now to do that. And that we assume that's probably also considered to be. So who was just telling me? Someone was telling me a couple of weeks ago they were talking about somebody in Eretz Yisrael. The guy sitting in B'nai Brak, and he's turning on ovens throughout the whole world. He's officially in Yisrael, just pressed the button, and everything goes on. Okay, so even though you're right, some of the reasons may not apply, but we have a little bit of a local lacuna, so look it up. Maybe that's going to be sufficient. Okay. Anyway, get back to this. So it's over there now. We've been talking about either the placing of the food being done by the Jew, the storing of the food being done by the Jew, the lighting of the fire, the extending of the fire, all of the above being done by the Jew. Now we have a little bit of a different twist in terms of the Jew's participation, the cooking process, namely that the Goy did a whole part of the cooking process, from the beginning of that part to the end of that part, but that wasn't the end of the cooking process. Now the Jew takes over, vice versa. So let's say you have a goy lights a fire, the goy puts the food on the fire, and the food cooks X amount, and then the Jew takes it off, and he starts all over again. He continues, he cooks the second half of the cooking, or the other way around. Where does that fit in terms of Bishalachim? So here the Gemara says in the fourth of the Ramakamah, but it's all on the Chesed and Alif. I'm going to be asking you, the Koshu Kamaicha Ben Drusoy, Engo Mishim Bishalav Yichodim. If a Jew took a raw piece of meat, raw piece of food, and cooked it to the point of Michael ben Jusoy, Ben Jusoy was a famous robber in the days of Chazal who would eat his meat, eat his food on the run. When he didn't have time to finish cooking, he would eat it either a third cooked or half cooked, different opinions in the Rishonim. But Rabbi Yechon tells us that if a Jew cooks food to that point of Michael ben Jusoy, and then the goy takes over and cooks it the rest of the way, even though it's a goy shafayim, with a goy shafat, with a goy shafat, everything, but since the Jew already did a significant part of the cooking, he took it from raw, from Eichel Ben Yisrael, that's also called Mikta Tavishalai Be Yisrael, and that would also salvage the food. So that's for sure. That everybody agrees to. And now the Rosh, in the fifth of Rav Kama, is close to more common Shaila, which is the other way around. What would the din be, says the Rosh, in the flip case? Now, not that the Jew started it and the Goy finished it, but vice versa. If Goy started it and the Jew finished it, so Goy takes a raw piece of food, throws it onto the fire, and it's cooking away for a half hour, and it's ready, quasi-ready. Not totally ready, halfway, third way, it's partially ready to be eaten. The Jew walks into the house and says, "Oh, what are you doing? You just cooked a steak on the fire." So the Jew quickly takes it off and puts it back on again. Did that accomplish anything? So should we argue that once the food reached the point of Maicha Ben Yisrael, it's over? Ben the Kula, Ben the Chumra. Just as we said before, that if the Jew makes it reach Meichel Medrasai, that's good enough to be no longer Bishalakom, but maybe we should extrapolate from that and say that if the Goy makes it reach Meichel Medrasai, that should be Bishalakom. That's what the Rush quotes for Isi Mishalakom. He saw somebody who said that, that somebody was the Rashba. The Rush and the Rashba were contemporaries. At first they lived in different parts of the world, and then they were neighbors. The Rashba was the Rav in Barcelona in Spain, and the Rush was the Rav in Germany. And the Rush's rabbi, Amram Rippenberg, was thrown into jail because he was trying to defend the Jewish community from all the excess, monetary things that were being levied upon them. So the government threw them around Amram Rippenberg into jail, and the Rush realized he was the next on the list. And the Rush ran away. They ran away from Germany, ran to Spain, but he needed a job. So he went to the Rashba. The Rashba was the chief rabbi. He was the head rabbi in Spain in Barcelona, the biggest Jewish community. So he gave the Rosh a shtetl in Toledo. Toledo was a smaller Jewish community. But the Rashba and the Rosh became contemporaries in Spain, the later years of his life. So the Rosh writes that he saw somebody, referring to the Rashba, that the Rashba said that it's a problem. But the Rashba held that whoever did the cooking at the point of Meichel Medrasai, bein l'kula bein l'chumra, that's all that matters. If the Jew was the one who was responsible for the food reaching that point, then it's okay. If the guy was the one responsible for the food reaching that point, then it's a problem. And the Rosh says, yeah, the Raya, with the Sharidan Heicha, Shabishla Yisroch, Meichel Medrasai, if the Gemara permits it, when the Jew makes it reach that point, the Gemara with Yichavim, the Engom Shabishla with Yichavim, Amachashi Kimabushal, the Engishlach Abishal. Any Bishals can happen afterwards, it's meaningless. The Lainir, I'm sorry, the Lahakel Asa'u Kimabushal, the Lahachmir, the Rosh says he doesn't think it's right. The Rosh says Bishalachim is very, very lenient. We have a right to be so lenient in Bishalachim that any coolers, any sensible coolers are okay. Says the Rosh, when we say that Meichel Medrasai is the determining point for cooking, that means to make something mutter. If the Jew made it reach Meichel Medrasai, then you're okay. But vice versa, just because the Goy made it reach Meichel Medrasai, it doesn't mean it's also. If you have the Jew finishing it up, then it would be okay. So according to the Rush, it would be a tremendous clue. According to the Rush, if you goof and somebody is cooking in your house, you walk to your house, you find the guy doing some cooking, so quickly get it off the fire and put it back on again. As long as the food wasn't finished yet, as long as it wasn't completely cooked, then it would be okay. According to the Rush, that trick would not work. According to the Rush, well, once it's partially cooked, it's done, finished, and anything happens yet, it's ain't bishul achadishul. And according to the Rush, no. According to the Rush, So subsequent cooking will solve the problem. How do we pass in that law? We'll make a leak within the Ramos on this, that even though the Goy did a significant amount of cooking, there's still a little bit more left to be done, that would be okay. I remember once I had the Shiloh that we used to have a setup with one of the babysitters at the time where she knew she wasn't allowed to put on the fire, whatever the rules were. There was some kind of a mix-up. I forgot about the details of what happened. I walked to the house and I saw that she had something cooking. She used to like these things, these plantains, like the Spanish bananas looking, but there's a big difference with plantains, they're not cooked. But the bottom one, you have to cook them. You can't eat them, it's not like bananas, you can't eat them raw. That's the comment. I don't know, maybe you can't, I don't know, I told you can't. So I used to always go to the store and buy these things, and we cook them up for fun. So one time I came in and she was actually cooking them herself. So I asked her what happened here with the fire. You know, a little bit of a language barrier. I wasn't sure what had happened. And I got the sense that maybe she had actually turned on the fire and she had actually cooked it herself. And it would potentially be my problem because it's my pot. So when I knew that these were things that were not nechol from Moshe Chai, because I knew she would never eat them more. She would always cook them up. So it was having a point what to do. So I asked her, I said, oh, are they ready yet? So she said, I tried to make casual conversation. Are they ready? I said, no, not yet, soon. It's great. So I just moved it on over a little bit. Turn the fire a little higher or something. Sure. According to the Rush, it's okay. And according to the Rush, if it would have been Mamish, it would have been Aim Bishlach, it wouldn't have been able to help. But I would have done one now. But since you told me that they weren't fully ready yet, that's like Meichel Medrasai. It's not Nechel, it's Pashal Patrach. Any stuff that could be ready to throw would be okay. So we're able to make from that. Then after they realized that it's probably unnecessary, because I don't think they would serve these things in anywhere fancy. Maybe where she came from, they would serve it at a fancy wedding. I don't think in the Burton Castle they were serving this at any wedding. I don't know unless I'm home. I don't see it at any wedding. So therefore, maybe it wasn't subject to Mishalachim altogether. But Achol Panim, there is a Machlokes HaRishon. What's the story over here? Do we say that once the food is basically edible, that the Jew just doing a little poshkin at the end is meaningless? Or do we say no? Remember last week we mentioned that there was the one opinion that maintained that coffee and tea may be a problem for bishalachim. We meet with them, we don't pass. Right? We pass that coffee and tea is basically just poisoned water. And just as the water is not bishalachim, so the coffee and tea is not bishalachim. But there was one opinion in this mission, one opinion that Achmarim would disagree with it. So according to that opinion, the person who walks in, he goes to a store, and he asks, even if it's a kosher store, and he asks them to make you a cup of coffee, make you a cup of tea, and usually sometimes they'll take the tea, but they'll throw it into the cup, and they'll hand it to you. So if you want to make sure that tea is not bishalachim or chaladeus, if you take it out of the water and put it back in again yourself, that would be okay. Because when they put it in for the first couple of seconds, it probably wasn't fully drinkable yet. It means that maybe Bishop of Chaka was drinking. It was really a good cup of tea. Needs a little bit more to put the tea sit in there and soak. Maybe one can argue that if you're able to salvage, you're able to get the Yadish of Emsa at any point before the food is fully edible, so then you would solve the problem of Bishalachim according to this rush. So getting back to the story, we have a major machlokes to be sharing here about if the goy does reaches a certain part of the bishul process, then the Jew takes over from that point on. Is that acceptable or not? According to the Rosh, but once the goy made it reach back with the story, it's a done deal. There's nothing to do anymore. You can't salvage it anymore. And according to the Rosh, even at that point, it would still be found. Actually, you saw a little bit of one of the marmal covers left in the bishulach, and we'll try to finish it up. Thank you.